Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Growth Show. I'm your host, Joe Whipple. Alice Granger is here with us today. Alice is the communications director for the Coral Restoration Foundation. Welcome to the show, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Yeah, of course. So as is our tradition around here, I want to dive into a fun, funny, dramatic, climactic, nerve-wracking moment, whatever it may be, from your work in the as a nonprofit professional so far. Do you have one for us?
I have a very dramatic one. I don't know if it's going to put people off working in the nonprofit space, though. But I'm going to take a risk.
Let's hear it.
Because I think that this story really represents just the fact that there is such a desperate need for environmental conservation and sustainable development. So I was working with a nonprofit in Madagascar as the dive officer, and I'd been there for a whole week. It's a very remote part of Madagascar, a very poor part of Madagascar. And one night, we're all living in sort of reed or straw huts on the beach. And we have one concrete building where we keep all of the diving equipment because we were doing marine conservation, locally managed marine protected areas. And one night we hear the building being broken into. And we all stay, we blow out our candles. There's no electricity, no running water in this place. We're miles from anywhere. There's no police. There's no roads, none of that stuff. So we all stay very quiet. And then we go up to investigate and we go to see that all of our diving equipment has been stolen. But while we're there checking out the damage, the bandits returned and they've all got AKs. So we managed to break.
Oh my gosh.
We managed to break into the house through this little window, and we barricaded ourselves inside the concrete building while they ran around scaring us off by banging on the doors and windows and stuff like that. And we called down to the local village, who were very supportive. We had a great relationship with them, who came up with their guns and chased them off. So that was pretty scary, I have to say. But, you know, I think it also just demonstrates that this particular part of Madagascar, people are very desperate and they weren't looking to kill anyone. But they did need the diving equipment for the illegal sea cucumber fishery that takes place in the north of the country. Sea cucumbers are a highly valuable commodity. They're sold to a lot of Asian markets as a delicacy. And so for people who are living on less than a dollar a day, some people less than a dollar a week, you know, being able to take part in that fishery is the difference between life and death for them. So, yeah, so the fact that we had all of this diving equipment was very, very tempting. So, yeah, that happened.
Wow. Wow. What I really liked about you sharing this insight is that when, I guess, some of the other stories I've heard from other nonprofits, that sometimes you don't realize that this is going on in, you know, other parts of the world. And you hear stories about, you know, intimidating conversations with donors, or, you know, these other things that are not life threatening or really terrifying at all. At the end of the day, it's more of an internal battle.
Yeah.
But what you just shared was like a very real life, like, oh wow, there are, you know, not just nonprofits, but other just people in the world and in certain positions that that are facing something like this. And a lot of times those are nonprofits, because nonprofits go to these places that, you know, might not be the safest and really do need help. And people like you are willing to put themselves in a position of, you know, risking your life or doing something a little more dangerous because of the value of what you believe you are doing, which I think is really neat.
I think so. And also, you know, for these people, a lot of the people who are going to be using this equipment, they're not trained divers. A lot of people end up completely crippled by this industry simply because they're trying to feed their families. You know, so there really is this desperate need for, I think, compassion for the world and, you know, for more efforts for sustainable development initiatives and environmental conservation, so that we can ensure that people live in a safe, healthy, you know, secure place.
For sure. Yeah. I totally agree. And along those lines, I would love to hear a little bit about how Coral Restoration Foundation is making a difference especially when it comes to the sustainability side of things.
So I'm super excited to tell you about this, because the reason that I love working with Coral Restoration Foundation is because you can see the difference that it's making. So Coral Restoration Foundation is the world's largest coral restoration group. We are restoring reefs on an unprecedented scale. We have already returned, I think, more than 130,000 corals to the reefs of the Florida Keys in the last 10 years. We've restored thousands of square meters of reef, and the work that we're doing is just scaling up. Essentially, what we do is we grow critically endangered species of coral that used to dominate the reefs here, but whose populations have now declined by almost 98%. We've just got 2% left of the previously dominant coral populations out here. So what we're doing is we have these huge offshore nurseries. You can imagine it like a forest of what we call coral trees, which are these structures that we hang corals on and we raise them up until they're reef ready, until they're a certain size. And then we take them from the nursery and we physically reattach them to the degraded reefs. And we can see that it's working. There is some mortality expected in restoration, but a lot of the corals that we've returned to the wild are now spawning several years after they've been returned to the reef site, which is really exciting, because corals will only spawn when they're really healthy, when they're thriving, when they've got enough energy to do that. So we know that the corals that we're putting out there have the capacity to sort of jumpstart the reef's natural processes of recovery.
That's wonderful. And for our listeners, so I personally have a soft place in my heart for, I would say, all things earth and nature and animal related. So the work that you guys are doing, I think, is fascinating. And I think the reality of it all for people who don't, who haven't maybe done their research or looked into it, is that our coral reefs across the board are really not in good shape. If you Google, you know, a picture of the Great Barrier Reef or something like that, what you see is not necessarily what is, you know, today's reality. Is that true? Is that pretty much true across the board? And your website, it seems like you do show real pictures. And it's not all beautiful colors all the time. It's like, these are very damaged ecosystems that we have just not taken care of.
Yeah, so you make a really good point. Yes, Coral, we've already lost 50% of the world's coral reefs in the last 30 years. And we're looking at the complete extinction of shallow water coral reefs in the next 80 years. That's before the end of this century. Humanity has never before faced the loss of an entire biome. It's like, imagine if all forests were suddenly gone from the planet. That's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, that's insane.
And we have a problem. The big problem is something that we call shifting baselines. So people who are now visiting a coral reef, they'll still see fish and they'll still see colorful things. They might see sponges and gorgonians and fans, and they'll see fish and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. And it is, but it is absolutely nothing like a healthy reef should look. So this shifting baselines thing is a real problem, because as you say, people have no idea what a coral reef really is supposed to look like. A coral reef is supposed to be full of color, full of life, you know, huge schools of fish, lots of apex predators, sharks and, you know, tuna and barracuda, you know, that the places, there are still places like this, in, you know, around the world in the Coral Triangle, and in well-managed marine protected areas, you do still see places, you know, which are relatively healthy and in relatively good shape. But in most of, especially the heavily visited and heavily touristed reefs around the world, what we're seeing is a shadow of what coral reefs should look like. Yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad.
And why is this important to the bigger picture of things?
I mean, it's critical. So coral reefs are a vital part of a healthy ocean. They support 25%, at least 25% of all marine life at some point in their life cycles. Coral reefs, I think that the most recent figures, they have an estimated ecosystem value of around $9.9 trillion. That's in terms of the ecosystem services that they provide. fisheries, protein for billions of people, tourism. They're also, especially down here in Florida and in the Keys, the barrier reef here is exactly that. It's a barrier reef. It's a vital piece of natural protection against, you know, the energy of big storms. So reefs will dissipate up to 97% of wave energy before they reach the shore. So you can imagine when we have a big storm roll through here, the reef is the first line of defense for people's homes, for people's businesses, you know, for all of that kind of stuff. So coral reefs are absolutely critical for the world. We've also got to remember that 70% of all the oxygen that we breathe comes from the ocean.
Right.
And coral reefs are a critical part of that healthy ocean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, corals are absolutely vital.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you for some of that insight. I felt like I knew some of those, but I didn't know them well enough to bring them up. So I wanted to just give you the floor because I knew that you would nail it. So when kind of backtracking a little bit, you were talking about some of your methods and CRF's methods to restoring some of the reefs around Florida. I read this recently. Do you guys ever use noise or sounds? I was reading that like you could play healthy reef sounds to attract fish to then spur on this like growth and kind of expedite the process. Do you guys do any of that?
So we don't. This is really new. This is really new research that's just come out, but it is super, super, super interesting. You know, and I'm sure that, you know, that as this kind of research, you know, becomes more widely known and more widely accepted, I mean, I would love to see that sort of thing being incorporated into restoration practice. You know, reefs are fascinating. Yeah, healthy reefs, they do sound very, very different from degraded reefs. As a diver or snorkeler, you'll probably know, you know, when you put your head underwater in a really healthy reef system, you'll hear all these little clicks and pops and snaps and stuff. And that's all of the biodiversity. That's the shrimp and the fish feeding on the reef and the crustaceans making noises and all this kind of stuff. So it's not surprising really to me that yeah, you know, fish are attracted to the sounds of, it's like, you know, you're walking down the street and you hear a great party, you know, or you hear a bar that's got some great music. You're like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and have a really good time. And I'd imagine that it's the same for the marine.
What a great example.
They're like, yeah, I can eat over there. I can hear stuff to eat. I can hear that there are things going on. That sounds like a place that I'm going to be safe and I'm going to be well fed.
For sure. Yeah, I like that analogy. So a lot of the listeners at this point know that I do a decent amount of traveling. So this evening I will actually be in Key West. And tomorrow I have a snorkeling expedition scheduled for the morning, hopefully before all the rain comes in. And in order to prep, we've already bought coral friendly or reef friendly sunscreen. What else do we need? I mean, am I contributing to the problem by just going on an expedition with maybe at one specific company or the other? Or what should I, if I was really doing my due diligence, what should I do if I were to, you know, want a vacation like this?
So that's a brilliant point, because here we have the kind of double-edged sword of tourism, right? On the one hand, yes, tourism does create impacts for the ecosystem. However, people who are sort of emotionally connected to these ecosystems are the best advocates for their protection and restoration. So the first thing that you've said is brilliant. Yes, we now know that there are certain ingredients in sunscreens that are hugely damaging to coral larvae and also actually to ourselves. You know, sidebar.
Yeah, sunscreen is not good for us.
Not good for us also. But if you can, you know, wear a sun shirt, wear a rash guard instead of putting any chemicals on yourself, you know, in the first place. Don't stand on anything. Don't touch anything. Don't collect any souvenirs from the reef. Don't buy, you know, curios like seashells and dried stuff, you know, sea stars and seahorses and stuff. You know, don't support any industries that are sort of directly, you know, harvesting this kind of stuff from these ecosystems. Make sure that the groups that you're going out with have sort of some sort of environmental or ecological philosophy. So, for example, you know, down here we have groups, you know, that that do promote themselves as conservation minded. So look for that on a website or ask the rep that you're speaking to. You know, do you run conservation programs? What's your stance on this kind of thing? Because those are the sorts of people who are going to be, you know, giving briefings, like making sure people aren't throwing things overboard, making sure that that other people, not just yourselves, are also following sort of best practices and best principles. Does that
help? Thank you for sharing. Yes, that definitely helps. I will not be touching or taking anything. I appreciate that. And hopefully it helps other people out there who are looking to do the same thing and are interested in still appreciating it and learning about it, but doing it in a responsible way. It kind of reminds me, I was on a orca sightseeing tour, I guess technically last year, in Washington. And our guide on the boat was very real about how humans are really endangering orcas. And she was not holding back. And so as fascinating as it was to see these orcas feeding and everything like that and swimming around, she was also telling us, she's like, what you're watching is these animals starve to death because of the way we fish. And we have a serious problem at hand. And she talked about, you know, how many years to extinction and so forth. And so not only did I walk away with, you know, just the fascination of being able to see these beautiful animals up close, I also walked away with a couple extra bits of knowledge, which I think is really important for these tourist driven places to kind of tap into that, especially in recent years where, you know, there has been so much press given to what's going on in our environment on this planet. And I would be interested in to hear what you and what Coral Restoration Foundation has kind of done as well in recent years as this kind of conversation has started becoming more popular. What have you guys done to really help yourself communicate effectively with the masses to continue being, you know, the biggest like coral restoration nonprofit in the world?
So I think there's a couple of answers to that question, really. I think in general, just reaching the world, I think that one of the most effective ways these days that you can reach people is through having great imagery and an authentic story. You know, there is so much noise out there. You know, people are scrolling through their social media feeds. You need beautiful imagery, even if it's beautiful imagery of something terribly sad. You need to show people the problem, and a picture speaks 1,000 words. So I think just in terms of being able to share the story far and wide, I think that is one of the most critical components. I think also having an authentic story, an authentic voice, and something hopeful. There is so much bad news out there. You know, it really is like you're talking about the orcas. You know, human beings have been responsible. I think that there was some report that came out. We've killed 80% of all wildlife in the last 100 years. We have done a really good job of absolutely annihilating the natural world. But at CRF, we're doing something about it. We have a story of hope. We have a positive message. It's like, it's not too late. We can turn this around. We have techniques that are proven to be able to do it. Just join us. And then I think that the third thing that we do here, you know, which is on a more local scale, but we have opportunities for people to come and physically get involved. So we run dive programs and snorkel programs, and people can come out with our team and work with us in the coral nursery. It's unlike anywhere else. It's 1.5 acres of these trees. You can find them on our website or on our social media, Coral Restoration Foundation. Go and take a look at those pictures. There are these coral trees that look like Christmas trees full of growing coral, and it's like a forest. And you can come out and you can dive with us. You can help us clean the trees, and then you can come and help us return these corals to the wild. And there is no greater feeling than actually handling a critically endangered species and putting it back where it belongs, and then also seeing other corals that have been returned to the reef, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 4 years before, growing and really starting to establish themselves and reestablish these populations. So I think that those would be the three things that I would say is imagery to reach the masses, authenticity and a sense of hope, and also an opportunity for anyone to come and get hands-on and actually join the mission in a very real way out in the water.
And do all three of those things play directly into like your marketing strategy and your communication strategy with everyone?
Absolutely.
And what are some of the specific tactics that you guys have seen as effective when it comes to like marketing and communicating beyond just like, so you have the imagery, you have the opportunity to show up, you have the proof of like, you know, we're here to make a difference. You know, we are making change. This is, you know, this is something that isn't, that we don't want to be happening, that we are doing something about. But how do you communicate all of that with people?
That's a big question, Joe. I mean, our communication strategy, you know, is multifaceted. Obviously, there's the standard stuff. There's our e-newsletter. There's all of our social media channels. There's our website. We do outreach events and all of this kind of stuff. I think what comes to mind is, so every year we have an annual gala. It's called Raise the Reef. It's a big fundraising event. It takes place in April. Tickets are available, by the way. Every year we create a short film that we show to the people who come to the gala. And the film that we showed in 2019, I think really encapsulated for me what I think is maybe best practice in this sort of field. We have sponsors, one of whom is Ocean Reef Club. They have been incredible in helping us fund one particular reef site, Carey's Fort Reef. And we had other sponsors for the gala. And for the video, we actually interviewed one of the marketing person from Ocean Reef Club, who's incredibly passionate about, you know, being part of this mission. And we interviewed another representative from one of the other sponsors who has lived in the Keys for many, many years and seen the decline. And we let them tell the story, because I think having other people sort of speak on your behalf and say, yeah, we see the problem, but here are people who are doing a really good job, and us kind of getting out of our own way and letting other people be advocates because they have experienced it, because they have seen it, because they have educated themselves, and because they understand the problem. I think, you know, empowering other people to be able to advocate on your behalf, I think, is one of the most effective ways that you can, you know, really scale up your sort of marketing and communication strategy. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. So then I actually really find that fascinating. Is your approach to that asking, just straight up asking somebody, hey, it seems like we have the same vision, would you be able to speak to this? Or is it building this relationship, seeing that you have similarities, and then you find an opportunity along the way, and then you reach out?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, there are people like Ocean Reef Club, which we have this incredible relationship with. They are so committed and dedicated. There are people that we find who are very like-minded, and, you know, with whom we have incredible synergy. You know, we have corporate sponsors, you know, who come to us and they're like, what you're doing is great, and it really fits with our mission, our philosophy. Let's work together. Let's make this happen. You know, companies like Four Ocean, you know, who came and they helped use their incredible reach and their incredible platforms to really share the story. Or, you know, Paddy, the dive people who come down to Coral Palooza and sort of live stream interviews to their 2 million followers. And, you know, so yes, there are some people with whom we just have these ongoing relationships. Other people, it's just they come to us and they're like, dude, this is so synergistic with our mission. Let's work together and let's find the best way that we can do that. I think it's just about being kind of able to be flexible and sort of responsive rather than reactive, but like really responsive and say, yeah, let's come up with something creative. Let's find creative ways of working together and using our strengths to, you know, to really help, you know, share this mission and drive this mission forward.
For sure. So let's say you've found a specific person or, you know, a corporation and another nonprofit who you've now built this relationship with. Let's say it's an individual. You have built a relationship with an individual who shares the same goals, who loves your mission. What are you doing as a next step to try to get them more involved, whether it is to become a volunteer, to become just a word of mouth impactful person on the bottom line, or to become a meaningful donor someday?
So I think it entirely depends on the individual. I'm sorry, there's no straightforward answer to that. So we look at everybody really as a donor. Our volunteers are all donors. They're donating their time. You know, our interns who work with us, you know, they are incredible advocates. They're learning here. It's a very robust educational experience for them, but they are also giving back to us, and they are, you know, they're donors in a way as well. You know, every single person who interacts with us is a donor in some way, somebody who shares a social media post from us. I think you have to treat everybody as if they were a donor. It doesn't matter if they're giving you $1 million or they're sharing a social media post. You know, every action is meaningful and every action is impactful. I think it's always, of course, much more impactful to be able to get people out onto the water and see for themselves what we're doing. You know, that really, then you see this kind of light bulb, this change. They're like, oh my God, this really works. This is amazing. And you know, when you show people the scale that we're working at, and, you know, and how possible it is to return these reefs from these kind of, you know, just tragic, tragic areas, barren to thriving. Having that firsthand experience, I think really is critical. If people can come and volunteer their time, you know, that's great too. I guess it depends, Joe. I'm sorry. There's no easy answer. It depends on the person. It depends on what their capacity is. But yeah, I think, If you wanted to challenge me, like TLDR, I would say just treat everyone like a donor and give everyone an opportunity to create an emotional connection with your work in whatever way that is. Getting them out to seeing what it is you do, you know, sharing stories from other people who've seen the work in action if they can't get there themselves. I'm rambling.
No, it's okay. Well, what I got from that was it sounds to me like you're very hands-on. that you don't have, you know, one approach. Oh, now we have you in our, you know, newsletter. This is what's going to happen. It's like, no, let's tap in further.
Yeah.
Do you have the capacity to volunteer? Are you in the area?
Yeah.
Do you have the capacity to donate money from a monetary perspective? Or is this something you're just really passionate about? And you're the type of person who, if you read a really interesting article, you're going to tell 10 friends about it. And that's important too.
Exactly.
And cool. Yeah. So you had mentioned in your answer, you had mentioned something, and I have a question about like turnaround time on a restoration project. I don't know what that looks like, but what you guys are doing, you know, you have your, did you say like acre and a half or three? I can't remember.
Nursery.
You have your nursery. Yeah. And then you take that nursery and you go out and you start pretty much from the ground up. What is a realistic turnaround time for, and I know reefs vary in sizes, so that's going to really change the answer, but like what's a realistic turnaround time on restoring a reef?
So it's really funny because you take a little fragment of coral out and you glue it onto the reef, but we use this two-part marine epoxy, and instantly you will see fish coming in and swimming around. Instantly.
That's so crazy.
But when we're looking at sort of like when we would say like restored,
right,
you're looking at 10 to 20 years. You've got to give these corals a chance to really grow and fuse together and grow into these like thickets and recreate that matrix of, you know, little hidey holes for the inverts and the fish and all that kind of stuff. So you're looking at a time frame of a couple of decades, which sounds like a lot, but it really isn't. It really is
for something like, that for coral reefs that have been around for as long as they have
500 million years.
I would agree, but I would say it is pressing enough, hopefully, for humans to say, "Oh, it's going to take 10 to 20 years. We shouldn't wait.
We shouldn't wait. We absolutely shouldn't wait. No, the time is now. We, you know, we before we lose them forever, We need to make sure that we're restoring what we've lost and putting protections in place for the reefs that remain. It's absolutely critical. Absolutely critical.
Excellent. Well, as we wrap up here, before we sign off, I would love for people to know how they could, you know, connect with you if they're interested in reaching out, or where they can learn more about Coral Restoration Foundation, or if they're going to be passing through Key Largo. You have an exploration center there. Where can people find you, and where can people stop by?
Brilliant. Okay, so if you're down in the Keys, you can stop by our exploration center at 5 Seagate Boulevard. It's next to the Pilot House Restaurant and Marina. Find us online. Our website is coralrestoration.org. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Coral Restoration Foundation. You can find us. Our Instagram is beautiful. We have lovely pictures. You can get involved, interact. We do Trivia Tuesdays. You can sign up for our newsletter as well online on every page of our website. Scroll to the bottom, sign up for the newsletter, and start tapping into all the cool stuff that we have going on. We would love more people to get involved in whatever way they can. So yeah, please come check us out.
Well, thank you so much, Alice. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk about everything that you are doing and that Coral Restoration Foundation is doing, and just the overall problems and the solutions that will hopefully come with those problems here on the podcast.
Yeah, no, Joe, thank you also for having us. Honestly, it's people like you that are really helping. You know, this is the way that we change the world, is by sharing the information. So thank you for having me on today. We appreciate it so much.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.